Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the second quarter 2021 Amdocs earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question and answer session. Now, to ask a question during this time, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad. Also, please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions, the duration and severity of the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on the global economy, and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2020, filed on December 14, 2020, and our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2021 on February 16, 2021. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Shuky Sheffer, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Joint Chief Financial and Operating Officer. Finally, a copy of today's prepared remarks will be posted on the investor relations section of Amdocs' website following the conclusion of this earnings call. With that, I'll turn it over to Shuky.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to everyone joining us on the call today. I am pleased to report another strong financial performance in our second fiscal quarter. My comments today will refer to certain financial metrics on a pro forma basis where applicable to provide you with the sense of the underlying business trends, excluding the financial impact of OpenMarket, which we divested December 31st, as previously announced. Revenue in fiscal Q2 was well above the midpoint of our guidance and up 5.7% from a year ago on a pro forma constant currency basis. Operating profitability exceeded the high end of our target range as we balanced accelerated R&D as a percent of revenue with continued focus on operational excellence. Free cash flow generation was also robust, driven by the successful delivery of project invoicing milestone and healthy cash collection with customer. During Q2, we returned a record quarterly cash amount of more than $400 million to shareholders by the way of share repurchases and dividends. This includes the net proceeds from OpenMarket, in line with the commitment we made to shareholders in the prior quarter. This was another strong sales momentum led by growing demand for our digital 5G offering. Additionally, we solidified our market leadership in the public cloud domain by utilizing our strong balance sheet to acquire Source Group, a leading global cloud consultancy business, for a net consideration of roughly $75 million in cash. Before moving on, let me take a moment to address the situation in India, where the COVID-19 pandemic has recently escalated. My thoughts are with our Indian employees, their family members, and the community at large during this extremely challenging time. To those who have suffered personal loss, I would like to express my deepest sympathies, and to those whose health has been impacted by the virus, I offer my warmest wishes and hope that you quickly make a full and speedy recovery. Our priority is the health and well-being of our employees, and we are investing resources to provide support for those most affected by the pandemic, which include making vaccination available faster wherever possible. From an operational perspective, we can leverage the scale and the flexibility of our global delivery model and our extended capabilities in other parts of the world, such as the US and the UK, where the state of the pandemic is much improved, and our core development and delivery centers in Israel, where activities are pretty much back to the offices. We are monitoring the situation in the daily to ensure business continuity for our customers. I am proud of our employees, and I want to thank them for all their dedication and commitment throughout the pandemic and their ability to collaborate with and support one another during this difficult time. Now, let me provide some color regarding our regional performance during Q2. Beginning with North America, we deliver our best ever quarter on a pro forma basis as a healthy level of customer activity continues throughout the region. As North America emerges from the pandemic, 5G network and fast and secure broadband connectivity has become recognized as a backbone of society. Service providers are investing heavily in fiber and 5G deployment, as witnessed in the many billions of dollars they allocated in the recent C-band spectrum auctions. To monetize their investment and maximize ROI, service providers must bring exciting new 5G offers and services to their consumers and enterprise customers. To meet this need, our customers are in a multi-year investment cycle in digital and 5G system modernization, cloud migration, and next-generation OSS platform for networks, all of which Amdocs is well-positioned to support with our cloud-native products and IP-based services. Let me take you through a series of examples to show how we are supporting our customers as they build the capabilities to address these market dynamics. At AT&T, we are executing a wide scope of activities under the 4-year managed services deal we announced in November 2019, on top of which we are accelerating new programs to modernize its consumer mobility domain, support the journey to the cloud, and deploy 5G monetization solution leveraging open-edge charging and policy capabilities. In T-Mobile, we are accelerating the digital transformation under the strategic multi-year agreement we announced last quarter, implementing the Amdocs One product portfolio to support next-generation communication services for its consumer and business customer, and next-generation hybrid cloud operation in the form of multi-year managed services engagement. At Verizon, we are implementing Amdocs Catalog One, our cloud-native platform designed to rapidly create and launch new 5G services offering. And we are now progressing an additional program in the network domain which leverages Amdocs Neo, our cloud-native next-generation OSS 5G platform, for services and network automation. Neo allows service providers to harness the power of cloud-based virtualized networks that are more dynamic, agile, and scalable. Around cable and media, we are also busy. We just completed successful subscriber migration for Altice USA following its requisition of Service Electric Cable TV last year, and we are continuing to implement our BSS and OSS platform for Comcast Business. At Charter, we are deploying our system to support Spectrum Mobile under a multi-year managed services agreement we announced last quarter, and we were recently selected by Dish to provide a cloud-based billing for enterprise and wholesale customers on its next-generation 5G network. Amdocs Media's Vindicia also extended its long-term engagement with Vimeo, which will continue to use Vindicia's cloud-based SaaS solution to enhance monetization of its subscription and one-time purchase services. Moving to Europe, we delivered healthy year-over-year revenue growth on a pro forma basis as we continue to program digital transformation projects to support improved customer experience, operating efficiency, and multiple convergence strategies for our customers. During the quarter, we saw continued demand for OpenEdge 5G charging and policy solution, which a major Tier 1 operator in the UK recently implemented on the AWS public cloud to support its global IT platform. In Italy, we expanded an existing relationship with Fastweb, which selected Amdocs to monetize its mission-critical inventory system as part of a transformation to create a 5G-ready platform to grow and differentiate its business, and we expanded our relationship with SES, a world-leading content connectivity solution provider, which selected Amdocs end-to-end testing framework to automate its flaw validation process. Turning to the rest of the world, revenue grew over year, and we began to see early but encouraging signs of recovery in Latin America. Amdocs was selected by America Mobile to deliver a digital transformation in Claro Chile and Claro Puerto Rico, and Amdocs signed a three-year agreement with Claro Brazil to support Claro's postpaid business and to provide services and solutions for its digital transformation. In Chile, Bigwikity extended its long-term relationship with VTR, part of the Liberty Global, and we signed a multi-year agreement with Telefonica Hispam to provide content licensing and processing for Movistar Play service in the five markets, including Argentina, Chile, and Peru. In Southeast Asia, Globe Telecom in the Philippines implemented our next-generation cloud-native Catalog One and Digital One platform for its enterprise business, which we will operate and maintain under a multi-year managed services contract. We strengthened our partnership with India's Airtel, where we completed a seamless migration of Airtel wireless postpaid customer to Amdocs' modern digital business system, and we signed a new deal to provide openness charging for the data management product on Microsoft Azure for M1 Limited in Singapore. Moving on, let me update you on the strategy to grow by accelerating the communication industry journey to the cloud. As we outlined a few quarters ago, Amdocs bring a full range of product and services with which to offer every customer a ready and tailor-made journey to the cloud. I am pleased to report that we see an attractive and expanding pipeline of opportunities which we hope to accelerate with the recent step we have taken to solidify our leadership in this domain. First, we are today pleased to announce the acquisition of Source Group, a leading global technology consultancy specializing in large-scale cloud transformation for sophisticated high-end enterprise customers in different industries such as communication and financial services across North America, Asia Pacific, and Australia. Source Group is part of our wide cross-company investment in the cloud and brings a proven cloud migration platform, deployment and landing zone framework, and trusted design processes alongside its deep partnership with AWS, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud. The acquisition also complements our portfolio of cloud-native products and services and further expands and diversifies our customer base, allowing us to implement cloud at scale. We are delighted the innovative Source team is joining Amdocs. We are proud to bring such a great professionals and practices to our industry. Second, I am pleased to announce an expanded strategic collaboration with Microsoft to widen the availability of our portfolio on Azure. The collaboration will enable service providers to transform with cloud-native solution and cloud services and deploy 5G networks in the cloud with Azure for operators, automated by the Amdocs Neo Suite and monetized by Amdocs Charging. We have also extended our multi-year strategic agreement with AWS to include Vindicia subscription management portfolio provided on AWS Global Cloud. To wrap up, let me briefly comment on the outlook for the remainder of our fiscal year 2021. We are raising our guidance for the full year revenue growth to reflect our solid performance in the first two quarters and our expectation for a stronger second half. Our confidence is supported by the visibility of our 12-month backlog, which is up more than 9% from a year ago on a pro forma basis, and they believe that there is a rich pipeline of opportunities across our operating regions, which we are working hard to monetize by executing our growth strategy. We are focused on profitability and the disciplined use of cash. We now expect it to deliver a double-digit total shareholder return in the fiscal 2021, including an improved outlook for a pro forma non-GAAP earnings per share growth plus our dividend yield. With that, let me turn the call over to Tamar for her remarks.
Thank you, Shuki. Let me start with a quick housekeeping item with respect to open market, which was included in our reported numbers for the income statement and cash flow in the first fiscal quarter of fiscal 2021, but is excluded for the second fiscal quarter of fiscal 2021 following the completed divestiture of this asset on December 31st, 2020. To provide you with a sense of the underlying business trends, my comments today will refer to certain financial metrics on a pro forma basis, which exclude the financial impact of Open Market from the current fiscal year and comparable fiscal year period. Second fiscal quarter revenue of $1.049 billion significantly exceeded the midpoint of our guidance range of $1.015 billion to $1.055 billion. Revenue includes a positive impact from foreign currency fluctuation of approximately $3 million relative to the first fiscal quarter of 2021, and a negative impact of $1 million relative to guidance. Additionally, Q2 revenue included a small amount of less than $2 million from two acquisitions, which we closed in the month of March, Source Group, the cloud consulting company Shuki mentioned, and another small one, which I will describe later. On a pro forma basis, revenue grew by 5.7% year-over-year in constant currency in the second fiscal quarter. Our second quarter revenue, as reported, grew by 0.1% year-over-year and was down 1.4% in constant currency, given the comparable quarter of last year still included Open Market results. Our second fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin of 17.6% exceeded the high end of our long-term target range of 16.5% to 17.5% and was up 30 basis points sequentially and 40 basis points from a year ago. The non-GAAP operating margin improvement reflects the divestiture of Open Market as well as initiative operational excellence while accelerating our R&D investment in our strategic growth domains of digital, 5G, and the cloud. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $3.9 million in Q2, the mix of which includes interest expense related to our short-term borrowing and 10-year bond, and the impact of foreign currency fluctuations. For forward-looking purposes, we expect that foreign currency fluctuations will continue to impact on non-GAAP net interest and other expense line in the range of a few million dollars on a quarterly basis. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was $1.13 in Q2, slightly above the midpoint of our guidance range of $1.09 to $1.15. Our non-GAAP effective tax rate was 18.2% in the second fiscal quarter, yet we are on track to meet our annual target range of 13 to 17%. Diluted GAAP EPS was 91 cents for the second fiscal quarter, in line with the midpoint of our guidance range of 87 to 95 cents. Normalized free cash flow was $133 million in the second fiscal quarter, up significantly as compared to $76 million a year ago. On a reported basis, free cash flow was $70 million in Q2. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $120 million, less $49 million in net capital expenditures and other, and included the annual cash bonus payment to our employees in January for the prior fiscal year 2020, consistent with our guidance last quarter. Please refer to the reconciliation table provided in our Q2 earnings release for an explanation of the difference between normalized and reported free cash flow in the quarter and for past periods. DSO of 79 days decreased by 3 days year over year and increased by 1 day as compared to the prior fiscal quarter. We remind you that DSOs may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. As of March 31st, total deferred revenue exceeded total unbilled receivable by $167 million. This reflects a decrease in total unbilled receivables of $19 million and an increase in total deferred revenue of $8 million as compared to the first fiscal quarter of 2021. Changes in unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue are primarily due to the timing of contract-specific milestones. Moving forward, you should expect these items to fluctuate from quarter to quarter in line with normal business activities. Moving on, our 12-month backlog was $3.54 billion at the end of the second fiscal quarter, up approximately $50 million from the end of the prior quarter. On a pro forma basis, our 12-month backlog was up roughly 9.3% year-over-year. As a reminder, we believe our 12-month backlog continues to serve as a good leading indicator of our forward-looking revenue. I am pleased to report another record quarter for managed services arrangements, which comprised roughly 61% of total revenue. This performance reflects high renewal rates, the adoption of our managed transformation model, and continued expansion of activities within existing customers. To clarify, the Open Market business was not classified as managed services, and therefore, its exit does not impact our revenue for managed services. Our cash balance at the end of the second fiscal quarter was approximately $1.2 billion, including aggregate borrowing of roughly $750 million. Our balance sheet reflects the acquisition of Source Group, a leading global technology consultancy, for a net consideration of roughly $75 million in cash. Additionally, we recently completed two small acquisitions, one in March, but still within fiscal Q2, and the second in April. In the first small acquisition, Project 202, our digital experience group subsidiary, acquired ADK for a net consideration of roughly $14 million in cash. Based in Boston, ADK is a user experience and application development company which complements Project 202's capabilities and has a diversified list of global enterprise customers, including Santander Bank, Mercer, and Brown-Forman. ClearBridge Mobile is the second small acquisition for a net consideration of roughly $15 million in cash, targeted to further expand our digital portfolio capabilities. ClearBridge is a Toronto-based mobile app development company which provides user-centric design and engineering service for telcos such as Bell Canada and Rogers, and non-telco customers like Yes Network and TD Bank. For all three recent acquisitions, additional consideration may be paid later based on the achievement of certain performance indicators. As additional color on use of capital, in early May, we repaid the $100 million of short-term bank loan we took on during the early part of the COVID-19 pandemic last year. This repayment was executed according to schedule under the original terms of the loan agreement. We remain comfortable with our balance sheet and believe that we have ample liquidity to support our ongoing business needs while retaining the capacity to fund our future strategic growth investments as and when the right opportunities arise. Additionally, we are committed to maintaining our investment grade rating. Now, turning to the outlook, the prevailing level of macroeconomic, business, and the operational uncertainty surrounding the magnitude and duration of the COVID-19 pandemic remains elevated, including the recently escalated situation in India. The midpoint of our revenue guidance reflects what we consider to be the most likely outcomes based on the information we have today, but we cannot predict all possible scenarios. We expect revenue for the third fiscal quarter of 2021 to be within a range of $1.04 billion to $1.08 billion. Our Q3 revenue guidance anticipates a negative sequential impact of approximately $3 million from foreign currency fluctuations. Additionally, our guidance incorporates the benefit of the recently completed acquisitions I just discussed. Regarding the full year 2021, we are raising our outlook for revenue growth on a pro forma basis to a new range of approximately 5 to 8% year-over-year constant currency, as compared to our previous range of 3.5% to 7.5% year-over-year. The new outlook equates to an improvement of roughly 100 basis points at the midpoint of the range, about half of which is attributable to core business, and the other half from recently completed M&A. On a reported basis, we now expect full-year revenue growth in the range of 1% to 4% year-over-year, as compared with our previous range of negative 0.3% to plus 3.7% year-over-year. The adjusted revenue outlook on a reported basis anticipates a positive impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately 1% year-over-year, as compared to a positive impact of 1.2% previously. Additionally, our outlook remains consistent with our previous guidance for an acceleration in the rate of year-over-year growth on a pro forma basis in the second fiscal half. Moreover, we still expect to see all three geographical regions to deliver revenue growth on a pro forma basis for the full year of fiscal 2021. As a final point, to further help with your modeling, we remind you that we originally planned for open market to contribute revenue in the range of $300 million for the full year of fiscal 2021, roughly 75% of which was expected from North America, with Europe accounting for the rest. Regarding profitability, we continue to anticipate quarterly non-GAAP operating margins to track roughly in line with the high end of the annual target range of 16.5% to 17.5%. This outlook assumes accelerated R&D investment as a percent of total revenue to support our customers and future strategy, balanced with our continued focus on delivering operational excellence. We expect the third fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of $1.14 to $1.20. Our third fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average dilution share count of roughly 128 million shares. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the third fiscal quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. Regarding the full year fiscal 2021, we are raising our outlook for non-GAAP diluted earnings per share growth to a new range of 7.5% to 10.5% on a pro forma basis, as compared to 5.5% to 9.5% previously. The improved outlook is mainly the result of better business fundamentals. On a reported basis, we expect to deliver fully diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 6 to 9% year-over-year as compared to 4 to 8% year-over-year previously. As a reminder, this outlook includes the impact of open markets for the first fiscal quarter only. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be within the annual target range of 13 to 17% for the full fiscal year 2021. We now expect normalized free cash flow for the fiscal year 2021 of approximately $820 million, which is slightly improved from our prior guidance of $800 million. The outlook is equivalent to about 8% of our Amdocs market cap and represents a conversion rate of roughly 130% relative to our expectations for non-GAAP net income. As a reminder, we expect free cash flow to convert at a rate more on par with our expected non-GAAP net income over the long term. Additionally, we now expect slightly better reported free cash flow for fiscal year 2021 of approximately $620 million as compared with $600 million previously. Our reported free cash flow outlook anticipates expenditures of roughly $140 million in relation to the development of our new campus in Israel, $40 million of capital gain tax in relation to the divestiture of open market, and other items. As previously stated, we expect fiscal 2021 to be the peak year of capital expenditure for the new campus. Note that the gap between the expected free cash flow on a normalized and reported basis has widened, primarily due to the tax in relation to the capital gain of open market. During the second fiscal quarter, we repurchased $360 million of our ordinary shares under our current authorization, including roughly $260 million funded by the net proceeds from open market, as we committed it to in the previous quarter. Roughly $100 million of our share repurchases in Q2 were executed as part of the regular share repurchase program. Regarding our capital allocation plans for the rest of fiscal 2021, we expect to return a majority of our normalized free cash flow to shareholders in the form of our quarterly dividend and share repurchase programs, subject to factors such as the status of COVID-19 pandemic, the outlook for M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. As of March 31st, we had roughly $228 million of authorized capacity for share repurchases. Additionally, our board has today authorized another share repurchase plan of $1 billion, which we will execute at the company's discretion going forward. Overall, we remain on track to deliver accelerated pro forma revenue growth, improved profitability, and strong free cash flow in fiscal 2021, the combination of which now supports an outlook for double-digit total shareholders' return of roughly 11%, including the 9% midpoint of our pro forma non-GAAP earnings per share, growth guidance, plus our dividend yield. With that, we can turn it back to the operator, and we are happy to take your questions.
Understood. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask your questions, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. Also, participants who queues up will be requested to ask one question and one follow-up only. Thank you. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Ashwin Shirvaikar from Citi. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hashuki, hi, Tamar. Congratulations. It's a very solid quarter, a healthy outlook raise. And that's actually my first question, is with regard to the outlook, I get the, half of the improvement is because of acquisition, but the other part, the inorganic piece, in which areas has sort of the velocity of client demand risen? Are you seeing, bigger project sizes or the speed of assigned work coming in faster? What's been the important change that you observed?
So Ashwin, it's a combination of all our growth pillars, none of them in particular, but that's actually very exciting because in general we are seeing very positive momentum across 5G, cloud, digital transformations. So we are continuing to see that momentum building up. You know, we try to give some color to the prepared remarks on the momentum we're seeing in North America, very broad-based, including key existing customers like AT&T and T-Mobile, all the way to new logos such as Verizon. Very happy also with the fact that Europe is continuing to play well for us, starting to see policy and charging awards happening in Europe in conjunction with continued digital transformations. And also rest of the world that has grown for the third quarter in a row, sequentially and back to year-over-year growth. That's very important. And with some even encouraging signs in CALA, which has been more of the slower part of the regions in the recent pandemic year. So it's very encouraging both from regional point of view as well as the growth pillars that we're seeing.
Got it. Understood. And then with regards to Sourced and the other two smaller acquisitions, they have non-telecom clients, including, say, financial services, for example. Is the intent to keep those clients, grow the non-telecom piece, incrementally? Any thoughts on that?
So you're right, both Source and the other acquisition brought some financial services customer. Definitely the main reason that we acquired the companies was support our strategy, Source to support our strategy for the journey to the cloud. They are really top-notch consultant. We got a lot of knowledge, top-notch consultant see capabilities in AWS, Azure, and Google, that definitely we are going to leverage in our taking the industry to the cloud of the comms and media industry. Having said that, they brought us some financial services customer. We are going to continue to support this financial services customer. And at the same time, we are evaluating if we can obviously push this domain and actually this customer can get some other additional services from Amdocs. At this point, it's more opportunistic rather than strategic, but we're evaluating this opportunity.
Understood. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Tal Liani from Bank of America. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Hope everyone is okay there, given what we're seeing in the news. I wanted to ask you about, first of all, just a general question. Is there any disruption to your business given what's happening in the country, number one? And number two, I want to ask about the spending environment and your participation in 5G. I'm asking this question every quarter because I know you should be getting some upside from it, and I wanted to know if you start to see any movement on carriers spending on 5G, spending with Amdocs on 5G, and what kind of projects you're seeing. Thank you.
So for your first question, there is no impact. I mean, there is some people are working from home a little bit, but as you know, yeah, in the last 12 months, the vast majority of the company, because of the pandemic, work from home, so I can tell you clearly there's no impact. Regarding the second question, we are definitely enjoying the 5G trend. All our, and the cloud, which are very much tightly connected. All our new projects are in North America, or the big ones, are related to 5G. This is the consumer mobility modernization AT&T. This is all the modernization that we do in T-Mobile, which you know is pushing 5G. And definitely Verizon selected our catalog mainly to support their new 5G offering. This is true also for Europe and develop APAC, so we see a lot of activity. And I think we said before that actually 5G initiated a new modernization cycle in the monetization systems, and we feel that we have the right product and services to support this a new wave of investment in the 5G. This is true not just for our obviously our ordering solution and billing solution. This is true also for our network solution. As we mentioned, we are doing in 5G project with Verizon and other customers. So because if we discussed before, in order to be able to deploy 5G services in the best way, you need all the monetization systems. Obviously, you need a very sophisticated catalog, and you need to make sure that all the provisioning of the services to the network is smoothly from the ordering system down to the network. So we are very happy with this trend, and I would say that definitely North America, the vast majority of our projects are related to 5G.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tim Horan from Oppenheimer. Your line is open.
Thanks, guys. The bookings look really strong. Can you give us a sense of maybe just how that's trending and any expectations? And does this suggest a pretty good correlation to with revenue growth for next fiscal year on kind of what we're seeing with bookings now? And then maybe just secondly, I know you touched on Verizon. Any more color on their thoughts here for more outsourcing? Thanks.
I didn't understand the second question, but I think I'll start with the first one. We are very happy with the momentum, and this is why we were excited to raise the guidance for revenue for this year. So we see accelerated growth, and this is accelerated growth is because the spending trend that we see and the fact that we came very, very well prepared with our product and services, and we see a very, very good alignment from the market trends of journey to the cloud, 5G, convergence, B2B and other domains. So there is a very good alignment which support our growth, and this is why we see a very strong second half of accelerated growth, and we were able to raise the guidance. We are not giving at this point any guidance for the next fiscal year, but you can see here from our tone that we are very excited about the momentum.
Two points to add here. Our 12 months backlog, like the definition, covers the next 12 months. So it is an important leading indicator for what we see ahead of us. Again, it cannot translate that one for one with expected revenue growth, but it's a good indicator. The other point...
And it raises 9.3%.
Yeah, and it's 9.3% year-over-year on a pro forma basis. And the other point I would say is that we are continuing to see a strong momentum in our managed services revenue, which is kind of the underlying recurring revenue base of our relationship with customers, on top of which we bring the new deals. So I think it's very important that this growth from the new pillars is coming on top of a very robust and strong base of business that we are continuing to shift into a more lengthy, I would say, and robust managed services engagements with our customers.
Thanks. And my second question was just around Verizon, their propensity to outsource more, do you think? And how do you think your position with the ability to kind of gain more of that outsourcing, if they do so?
It's still early stages. I can see you that we are enjoying a very good relationship with Verizon. I think there is a lot of appreciation in Verizon for our products and services. As I mentioned in my open remarks, they are leveraging our next generation Catalog One, which is our cloud native platform to support all the offering. This is going to be the master product catalog of Verizon. We have a lot of activity in the network, in the service design and create, and services around it. So, I think so far it's moving very well ahead. I believe that if we'll continue to show value to Verizon, we can even expand the relationship.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tom Roderick from Stifel. Your line is open.
Hi, Shuki. Hi, Tamar. Hi, Matt. Great to hear from you. Thank you for taking my questions. So, Shuki and Tamar, I really appreciated the mid-quarter call. You're getting a lot of questions from clients, and there was some skepticism that I appreciated you taking some time to answer some of those questions. You know, one of the themes that sort of seemed to be up for question when we did that last call was the durability of your relationship with some big tier ones, particularly AT&T at the heart of it. When I listened to your remarks today, Shuki, it seems very, very clear that not only is North America growing, but AT&T as a particular customer seems to be on very solid footing. So I'd love to hear, you know, just your perspective on the durability and sustainability of the projects that you're working on. As you look at these type of projects, are they recurring revenue in nature and long-standing that'll, you know, extend beyond just 2021? Tell us about the strategic nature of what you're doing there and getting tied into their future as opposed to, you know, catch up projects and band-aid fixes that might only be for, say, 2021. Thank you.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, there are certain pillars to our relationship with AT&T. Besides the fact that we have a strong partnership with AT&T probably more than 20 years. So there is the first pillar of a very significant managed services that we announced in late 2019 that we signed for 4 years. And this is managed services for many, many systems of AT&T. Some of them are MDOC system, and by the way, some of them are not MDOC system. On top of it, we discussed about the fact that we have started the modernization journey of AT&T consumer mobility. Now, if you look at AT&T is doing very well, definitely in the mobility domain. Consumer mobility is in the heart of AT&T's strategy, and the fact that we were selected to do this project with AT&T, it means that this is a very strategic project for us and AT&T, and definitely this is not a plaster or something like this. This is a very long-term activity that we do for AT&T, and this will be the next generation cloud native system of AT&T for the years to come. Additionally, we are very involved with AT&T journey to the cloud. We are working together with Microsoft and taking different applications to the cloud. Not the vast majority of them are not even MDOCs, and this is a very significant activity that we do with AT&T. On top of it, as you might know, we are pretty much running the AT&T Cricket, AT&T Mexico. We are doing a lot of data-related activity and security activity. So I would say that our partnership with AT&T is strategic than ever, and we are working with AT&T in the most strategic domains of AT&T. I hope I'm
really
clear enough.
Really helpful and very clear. Thank you, Shuki. Tamar, you know, now that we have some of the numbers on the balance sheet behind the quarter and, you know, ability to kind of comment a little bit further on some of the questions around liquidity, can you kind of take us through, you know, a little bit more on your philosophy on, you know, on your strategy regarding liquidity, any recent needs to draw on the revolver? I know that's a question you've been getting from some investors, but maybe bigger picture, if I look at this share buyback of $360 million in the quarter, that would be a pretty tough thing to do if you were having liquidity issues. So again, if you can kind of highlight some of those strategies and then repeat what you talked about with respect to where the share buyback goes from here. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Tom. So I think we need to start with the fact that our business model is one that generates consistent and healthy margins then converged into cash flow. So as we always say that our business model should generate on par the earnings to cash conversion over time. Some years slightly less, some years more. Specifically 2021, we are at 130% earnings to cash conversion. So while this is not necessarily sustainable for many years, obviously it's a good place to be at. Now, taking that in terms of the use of cash, we've always been looking on a balanced approach where we can do both return of cash to shareholders, and I believe we've been very consistent about that, where the majority of our free cash flow over the years have been returned to shareholders, with a dividend that has been introduced already 6 or 7 years ago, increased every year in double-digit growth, and a share repurchase program that has been running for many years, and again, authorized again, and an upload of additional $1 billion to that program. So we've been consistently returning cash while continuing to fund the M&A strategy of the company. Looking specifically into the question of the recent drawn facility during the peak of the pandemic beginning period, where liquidity stress was all over the markets, we decided as a short-term move to draw some money on the facility, which has been returned pretty quickly. And then as a more strategic move, we enjoyed the historically low interest rates in the market, probably the lowest I've seen in the last 14 or 15 years, and issued a public bond for 10 years at $650 million. That's adding to our capacity, something that is good to have. We declare we are continuing to maintain an investment grade rating, and we are going to use this cash if and when the right strategic opportunities present themselves. In terms of return of cash to shareholders, we've been returning over the last 5 years about $500 million every year to shareholders. This year, obviously, it's going to be much more. Just this quarter, we returned over $400 million. And over the overall fiscal year 2021, we indicated we are going to return the majority of the $800 million generated as normalized free cash flow. So clearly, we are returning a lot of cash to shareholders, both specifically in 2021 and in a consistent manner over the last 5 years.
Really helpful. Thank you, Tamar. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Again, for anyone else who wants to ask questions, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Jackson Ader from JP Morgan. Your line is open.
Great, thank you. So, Shuki, on the Source acquisition, you know, I think a lot of us think of Docs as being able to handle, you know, complex digital transformations or moves to the cloud. So, just curious, you know, what expertise does the Source Group have that maybe, you know, would be complementary to Docs?
Hi, Jackson. Source Group have over 150 top professionals that understand the cloud environment extremely well, develop their own tools, landing zone, other capabilities. When you search in the market today for cloud capabilities, you know, it's not easy to get talent. We were able to get really top-notch talent with the Source Group that actually we are obviously at the same time we are reskilling our employees. We have thousands and thousands of employees which are cloud certified, AWS, Azure, and more, and this is a great addition, but more from the consultancy perspective that we added to our capabilities. So it complements our cloud native system implementation capabilities, operation capabilities. Now we have also a very strong consultancy arm with top-notch experts.
Okay, great. And then Tamar, just as a quick clarification for my follow-up, the acquisitions in the quarter, any commentary you can give on how much they contributed to the backlog number, the ones that were actually closed before quarter end, and then any margin color you can give on those?
It was very little. Usually what happens when we acquire those more of a consulting and development arms, their visibility of the business, of the way they used to run it, is pretty low. So we are very, of course, conservative as we acquired them in terms of how much we add to the backlog, basing that just on signed and very high visibility business. So most of the $50 million sequential increase has nothing to do with those acquisitions. I believe that what we're seeing in terms of the pattern of the backlog, you know, we've seen two very strong quarters before Q2, where we've had 140 sequentially and then 150 sequential additions to a 12-month backlog. As we said before, this is not sustainable, unfortunately, in this space necessarily every quarter. But definitely with 50, I feel very good. If you remember our past track record, it used to be mainly quarters of 20, $30 million sequential increases in 12 months backlog. So having another strong quarter with a $50 million sequential addition is definitely an indication of the strong business momentum we're seeing.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Will Power from Baird. Your line is open.
Okay, great, thanks. I guess first a clarification, and then I have a second question. I guess in the press release, you indicated that revenue is down, I think, $37 million sequentially. It sounds like that was principally open market, but I just want to be clear. I think open market by itself would have been a fair amount more than that, right? And so that would imply some offsets. So I guess just maybe just a little clarification on that first.
Yes, absolutely. Open market, as we've indicated, was expected to generate around $300 million in fiscal 21. So if we assume for simplicity, linearity, let's say 75 a quarter. So absolutely, we've seen a positive momentum, and that's why when we are indicating the pro forma performance, we are talking about 5.7% year-over-year growth in Q2. For former constant currency. So the momentum is strong in real terms.
Okay. All right. And then my second question, I think Ashuki that said that North America pro forma revenue was a new record. I don't know if we got an update on the other two geographies, but I guess I'd just be curious, you know, pro forma without open market, if you looked at Europe, rest of the world, how are those two trending? What are some of the, you know, the puts and takes, you know, year over year there?
So as we said, about a quarter of the open market revenue was coming from Europe. So you can see that also if we take Europe, the performance has been strong on a pro forma basis. Some of that, a little piece of that, has to do with currency. But even if I take out the currency impact, it's been a strong quarter for Europe year over year as well. And just to clarify, in the rest of the world numbers, there was no impact of open market. So the open market revenue was about three quarters going into North America and a quarter going into Europe.
And we had, it's like the third sequential growth
in the rest of the world, yes. Third quarter in a row in which we're growing, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
There are no more questions at this time. Turning the call back to Mr. Matt Smith for closing remarks.
Yep, thank you everyone for joining the call today and for your interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the next few days, and if you have any additional questions, please call the Investor Relations Group. And with that, have a great evening. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.